Welcome to Zen Mind, a podcast featuring talks from Zenki Dilo Roshi, the guiding teacher at the Boulder Zen Center in Boulder, Colorado. We are excited to announce the self-paced course on Dogen's Genjo Koan is live. There you can find all the rest of the Dharma talks in this series. The course helps make Dogen's text more accessible and bring his teachings into our everyday lives. I've put a link in the show notes where you can learn more about it. If you would like to dive deeper into all the topics discussed by Zenki Roshi in this podcast, consider becoming a premium subscriber. This will give you access to recorded Q&A sessions related to each talk, as well as previously unreleased talks from our intensives. Becoming a premium subscriber helps to support the continuation of the podcast and Zenki Roshi's teachings. Learn more about it by clicking the link in the show notes. Now here's Zenki Roshi.
Good morning. Good afternoon in Europe. I'm planning to continue with the discussion of the Genjo Koan, which began weeks ago. So we're just jumping in where we left off during the seminar, which happened last week. Maybe you feel like, I don't know, I didn't attend everything, and you don't have the context. But as I said before, in studying this text, we want to study it line by line. The text is your context, but, you know, your experience is your context too. So we can jump right in with our experience. Now, just some general remark. There's kind of a lot of text I want to get through today. The usual understanding of practice and awakening, or practice and enlightenment, is that you practice in order to achieve enlightenment, or come to realization, or awaken from your deluded life. Yeah, so this is an instrumental view of practice. You practice in order to get something out of it. Dogen really denies this view. This is something we should understand. He doesn't look at practice and enlightenment this way. So how does he look at it? It's you know, you've maybe heard this, or you remember me mentioning Suzuki Roshi's expression, all of you are already Buddhas, just as you are. And there is room for improvement, he said. We could also say there is a need to practice. We're already Buddhas just as we are, and there is a need to practice. Now, it doesn't really make sense that if you're already a Buddha, that there's a need to practice. Or this is not obvious. Because another view is that if enlightenment is a thing that you can achieve, then when it's achieved, you don't need to practice. Dogen's view is that there is never an end to the need of practice. We need to practice endlessly. So if practice isn't an instrument to achieve enlightenment, then what is it? In Dogen's view, it is an expression of enlightenment. You are expressing your Buddha nature through your practice. You're enacting it. In fact, it is worthless if it is not enacted. So our practice then extends everywhere. It is our practice of Zazen in the Zendo, but it is also our practice with every situation, every moment, each person, each thing. Who's this? Kes? Oh. So in our practice, we express enlightenment. We express our wakeful nature, we could say. This is the view. All right, so let's see if we can go back into the text. I will present it to you in little sections. So Dogen says, when the Dharma has not yet fully penetrated body and mind, one thinks one is already filled with it. And when the Dharma fills body and mind, one thinks something is lacking. For example, when we sail a boat into the ocean beyond sight of land and our eyes scan the four directions following the horizon, it simply looks like a circle. No other shape appears. Okay. When you have a special experience, you know, like you sit Zazen and you may or may not experience that the boundaries of your body become kind of fuzzy. The body, as you experience it from the inside, loses its clear shape. It's like a wide field or spaciousness appears, and, you know, the body either dissolves in it or its boundaries are somewhat unclear. You could say, oh, this is an important experience. It's the separation between self and other is loosened, or it is gone. This is quite common. Some people don't recognize they have this experience, and sometimes this experience is very clear. It just happens sometimes. Now, if you have the experience in your daily life, your eyes are open, you're sitting somewhere, and you experience this non-separation, it can feel like everything is inside. It's not like here's the self and here's the outside world. It's like it is one space. If you hear people speak about oneness, you know, we're all one, or the world is all one, we're all connected. Unless they're just talking about something they read or fantasize about, it's some kind of experience like this. And in my experience, the world feels very near and filled kind of with love, I would say. It's everything is vivid and precious. Say you have some kind of experience like this, or you are hoping to have some kind of experience like this. Dogen says, you know, so this, to experience the ocean, which is kind of the sea of being, or everything all at once, Dogen says it appears when we sail out into it, maybe through on the boat of meditation, you know, sail out of it. It feels like, or it appears like a circle. This experience of oneness is not enlightenment. When you think you are filled with the Dharma, like it is not yet fully penetrating body and mind. When it is fully penetrating body and mind, you realize that something is lacking. What is this lack? This lack is that there is no way that you can grasp the nature of enlightenment. You cannot put it into a box like oneness or non-separation. You can't put it even in the box of, you know, established Buddhist terms of emptiness. This is trying to grasp what cannot be grasped. What is lacking, I mean, the realization that something is lacking, that in each moment, we need to enact enlightenment. In each moment, we need to answer what the moment is requiring us to do. And you are never done with this. Because each moment is new, something new is required. Some new response is required. The experience of the ocean as a circle that Dogen references here, you know, some experience of non-separation, an experience of emptiness. It's like, in such an experience, it can feel like, you know, the self disappears. The body loses its clear shape. You don't really matter that much. It's sort of like you dissolve into the space around you. So the self is swallowed up, or the self is swallowing the 10,000 things. Everything seems to be on the inside. This experience isn't worthless, right? It does appear like, when you are on the ocean, it does appear like a circle, but is not the goal or the end of practice. This is, I think, what he's saying here. Even though no other shape appears, right, it appears like a circle. He says, this ocean, this great ocean, is neither round nor square. It does not fall into any category. It has inexhaustible characteristics. If the characteristics are inexhaustible, that's another way of saying, we are not coming to an end with our study and our practice. Then he says, to a fish, it looks like a palace. To a heavenly being, it looks like a jewel. To us, as far as our eyes can see, it looks like a circle. All the myriad things are like this. Not just an experience of oneness or non-separation is experienced, you know, differently by different beings. All things are experienced differently by different beings. There are innumerable, inexhaustible worlds. Now, this, if you know the Sutra of Mountains and Waters, is another text by Dogen, he really gets into this, and I want to read a little bit of it to you. Not all beings see mountains and waters in the same way. Some beings see water as a jeweled ornament, same image. But they do not regard jeweled ornaments as water. What in the human realm corresponds to their water? We only see their jeweled ornaments as water. Some beings see water as wondrous blossoms. They do not use blossoms as water. Hungry ghosts see water as raging fire or pus and blood. Dragons and fish see water as a palace or a pavilion. Some beings see water as the seven treasures or a wish-granting jewel. Some beings see water as a forest or a wall. Some see it as the Dharma nature of pure liberation, the true human body or the form of the body and the essence of mind. Human beings see water as water. Water is seen as dead or alive depending on the seer's causes and conditions. Again, it goes on and on. It's just get the hang of it. It's like water is water to us, but it is way more mysterious than that. I'm going to skip over some things. You can look this up yourself. This being so, it is difficult to say who has created this land and palace right now or how such things have been created. To say that the world is resting on the wheel of space or the wheel of wind is not the truth of the self or the truth of others. You may wonder, you know, who would say, you know, that the world is resting on the wheel of space or the wheel of wind? You study philosophy, the pre-Socratics in Greece, right? They basically came. One person said, the ground of being is water. Another person said, the ground of being is air. Another person says, the ground of being is fire. One person says, the ground of being is the one. The ground of being is openness, indeterminacy. They already had all the same concepts in Europe or in Asia. But here, this is fascinating to me. Such a statement that the world is rooted in this or that or the other thing, such a statement is based only on a small view of assumptions. People speak this way because they think that it is impossible for things to exist without having a place to rest. Now, this is so fascinating. It's like a shift from what is it? What is the origin of the world, or what is the ground of being, to reflecting on why people need a ground of being. Because we feel we need to rest somewhere. Our mind needs to grasp something so that we know what's going on. It is intolerable for the human mind to live in a place of not knowing. I mean, for some people, it just doesn't matter, you know? Just go to the movies. Sometimes I wonder, is that maybe the better strategy, you know? The Buddha said, all things are ultimately unbound. There is nowhere where they permanently abide. Okay, so one way we could read this is that there's all these different beings, water and dragons and heavenly beings and hell beings and humans and, you know, you can add all the insects and birds, and they all experience the world, what we call the world, differently, and they experience it from their perspective. This is very clear, actually. And so the usual way is to think is that each being, humans included, have a perspective on the world and what the world is in itself. actually is hidden from view. We cannot know it. Now, in the West, Immanuel Kant made this point in the history of Western philosophy. He made a distinction between the thing in itself and the thing as it appears for us. This is this point of view. And we can never reach the thing in itself because we're bound by our senses and by our minds and what is possible through them. And it's obvious, you know. Birds see things. We know this now by inference. Birds see things. Dogs hear what we can't hear. Bats fly through the air with echolocation, you know, inconceivable to humans. So their world is different. But I think it, you know, Kant is being criticized because it's like, how can you postulate the thing in itself? It's like, if it is really removed from being able to be perceived, how can you even talk about it? There's all these different perspectives on the thing in itself, but we still want to ground the world in the thing in itself. Why? What did Dogen says? People speak this way because they think that it is impossible for things to exist without having a place to rest. I mean, at least they need to rest in this crazy abstraction of a thing in itself. There was somebody who defended Kant and said, well, he kind of knew that it was preposterous to speak about the thing in itself, but the idea that everything is just made up, that we're just making up the world, was so, you know, preposterous to him that he decided to use the thing in itself and ground the world at least in something. The Buddhist way, or let's just say, I don't know, the Buddhist way, there's so many schools, right? Dogen's way is kind of to pivot away from this kind of metaphysical speculation and say, our job is to feel the openness of the world and act as bodhisattvas. You stop the speculation. You do something. In each moment, your job is to do something, to enact your awakening. Within this dusty world and beyond, meaning in the absolute and relative realms, there are innumerable aspects and characteristics. We only see or grasp as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. Now, not only is it different for heavenly beings, fish, dragons, and human beings, it is also always different for us. The power of our eye of study and practice changes with time. How the world appears to us when we're 3 years old is different from how it appears to us at this age. And because he's talking about the path of practice, as you are practicing, your views continue to change. There is nothing fixed about this. There are innumerable aspects and characteristics. Well, and we only see or grasp as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. And this is changing. When we listen to the reality of myriad things, we must know that there are inexhaustible characteristics in both oceans and mountains. I like this, you know. He's talking about an ocean, and he's clearly using the ocean as an image for the totality of being, right? You can't go bigger than this. But then he says, well, there are oceans and mountains. So even this image for totality all of a sudden shifts and it's like, don't grasp it as the ocean and make yourself comfortable in that image. No, there are inexhaustible worlds in both oceans and mountains. And there are many other worlds in the four directions. This is true not only in the external world, but also right under our feet and within a single drop of water. You've all seen images, you know, like how you can go into the microcosm and its endless worlds there, and how you can go into the macrocosm and its innumerable worlds there. There's no place for us to rest. The world is open-ended. You know, it changes with experience and time. And knowledge is not dismissed. You know, he does speak about we see and grasp in accord with the power of our eye and the study and our study and practice. It's not like there's nothing for us to know, but we're practicing not knowing in the sense that we maintain open-mindedness. Perspectives deepen and change and shift. You know? So knowledge doesn't get dismissed. It's understood as a process. Don't rest on anything you attain. Use it, yes, but don't rest on it. Don't bag it up and say, now I have this. Okay, then it goes on. When a fish swims, no matter how far it swims, it does not reach the end of the water. Okay, there you have it again, this endless path. When a bird flies, no matter how high it flies, it cannot reach the end of the sky. Now, another thing here, so this new image is introduced, the fish in water and the bird in the air. And we have had this in the very first talk I gave about the title. We looked at the word koan as the way Dogen presents it as the universal and the unique, inseparable from each other. The wave expressing the water making waves. The water has to have waves to express itself, the individual and the universal, inseparable from each other. This is the koan. Here it is the fish and the ocean, and the bird in the air. The medium in which, from which the bird arises, well, I'm getting ahead of myself, but it's like the medium that the bird uses or the medium that the fish uses is limitless. And yet, it is used by and expresses itself as the bird flying and as the fish swimming. When the bird's need or the fish's need is great, the range is large. When the need is small, the range is small. In this way, each fish and each bird uses the whole of space and vigorously acts in every place. Now, maybe you've had a feeling, I have had this feeling, that your life is small, insignificant, that you should, you know, do more, have more impact, be more useful, be, you know, more than you are, because what you are is so, you know, small. then maybe you've had feelings like you are too involved with stuff, spread thin, doing too many things. Maybe you feel you need to concentrate. In this sense, you know, I'm just using large and small in different ways. Make your life more focused, smaller in a way. Maybe you have felt that your life, you know, is not spiritual enough. You have to widen your perspective and not be so worldly. Or maybe you felt that your life has been too spiritual at times and you haven't, like, got involved with the world enough. This would all be, you know, measuring your life as too small or too big or too this or too that. Dogen has a incredibly generous view. When the need is great, the range is great. The range is large. When the need is small, the range is small. In this way, each fish and each bird, each of us, right? This is also interesting. He could have just talked about fish. Clearly, this is a metaphor, right? But he's not just talking about fish. Immediately, it's like you could just talk about the ocean, but then you have to also bring in the mountains. You see that there's real difference. There are fish and there are birds. And there's me and there's you. And there's you and you and you, and we are all different. And each bird and each fish uses the whole of the medium in its own way and vigorously acts in every place. Well, one practical lesson is do not compare yourself to others. This is a sure recipe for suffering. The encouragement here and the generous view is you are a full expression of the medium, of the totality of being. And your job is to express this totality in your place, at your time, in your way. Not in some other person's way. Not in the way you think it should be, you know, bigger or smaller. Each fish, each bird uses the whole of space and vigorously acts in every place. And this also allows for change in our life. Sometimes it's small and sometimes it's large. Sometimes you get invited into something and then that ends and then it's different. And when we age, maybe our life gets, you know, our range is smaller because our physical capacity shrinks. What's wrong with that? Think about it. Feel about it. However, if a bird departs from the sky or a fish leaves the water, it immediately dies. Okay? We are completely, interdependently connected with the totality of being. If we think that we are independent, we die. If we were physically cut off from air, we die. If we're cut off from water, we die. If we're cut off from other human beings, we die. The fish and the bird are completely interdependent with their medium. We should know that for a fish, water is life, and for a bird, the sky is life. The entire world, which is our medium, right? The entire world, the earth, as he later says, is life. A bird is life, and a fish is life. Life is a bird. Life is a fish. You know, in my own way of trying to use language for this stuff, I speak about aliveness And, you know, the aliveness of undivided activity, which, you know, is another word for interdependence. Everything is interactive in an undivided way. This is aliveness. Aliveness is not a personal property. Aliveness is a quality of the, or it is the field. Like I said, if all fish, all birds, all identifiable beings perished because of some climate disaster or whatever, aliveness doesn't go away. It's not manifesting right now. Death is manifesting under these conditions, but under other conditions, life manifests again as a bird or a fish, as a bacterium. I love this line. Life, and in my language it would be aliveness, is the life of a bird. Aliveness manifests as the life of a bird. It manifests as a life of a fish. And he's talking about us, of course. Aliveness manifests as the life of this body and mind. Each body and mind. And we should go beyond this. This is a pretty profound view of life. Breathtaking, actually. But we should go beyond this. There is practice enlightenment. This is the way of living beings. Again, let's contemplate this, but we should go beyond this contemplation and enact practice enlightenment from moment to moment. This is the path. This understanding is the back, you could say it's the background for doing your practice. Therefore, if there are fish that would swim, or birds that would fly only after investigating the entire ocean or sky, they would find neither path nor place. If you think that your life only begins after you have understood all this, you have neither path nor place. I've been this person. I really have been this person. I have a little bit philosophical mind. I just thought I had to figure out the world before I could find a place or a path. It was intolerable to me. Like he says, you know, people speak this way because the world has to rest on something. I felt like I had to figure out what it rests on. And then you're lost. I know this from my own experience. There's neither a path nor a place. You're just lost. And you're desperate to figure it out. In contrast, quoting the Genja Koan again, when we make this very place our own, our practice becomes the actualization of reality. Our practice becomes Genjo Koan. How do you make this place your own? You know, this is meditation and mindfulness practice. You practice to let go of your thinking mind and arrive here with your attention. Here. Now. This is really helpful to me, so I'm sharing it, and I say it often. The now is a here. The now is not some abstract idea of present. The now is very physical. It is here. There's no now aside from here. So Dogen talks about a place. This place is here now. When you make yourself present, a path unfolds. And your practice becomes Genjo Koan, to complete that which appears. That which arises in this very perspectival way, right? You're not a hungry ghost and you're not a dragon, you're a human being, and the world appears to you this way. And you have the full capacity to engage it. But you only have that full capacity to engage it, to complete that which appears, when you have a practice of arriving here. When you make this way, so when you make this place your own, when you make this path your own, your activity naturally becomes Genjo Koan. Now, Dogen speaks about a place and a path. And is it the same, or why are these two words here? I've touched on this before. He talks about space, the here, and he talks about time. The path is time. And where do we go from here? We go here, from here. We carry, as I like to say, the present into the present, not into the future. We carry the here into here. This is the path. So it's not like there's nothing static about this place. This place, even though you make it your own, also has to become a path. It has to become this. I've said this in the first talk about the title Genjo, you know, complete that which appears. You complete that which appears by seeing it as an expression of space. This individual thing, this drop of dew, this little thing, your little life is an expression of all of space. If you can see it that way, that's one kind of completion. And then there's still the completion that needs to happen in time. This appearance here requests something of you. You know, it requests of me to speak and it requests of you to listen. Now, we could change this up. You could walk away. Maybe you say, oh, this nonsense, it requests of me to leave. This is how you actualize Genjo Koan, to complete that which appears. This path and this place is neither big nor small, neither self nor others. Right? It doesn't fall into any categories. This is so confusing, you know, to... This doesn't fall in, it could be confusing, it doesn't fall in, but feel the liberation. All these different ways of looking at it, it's this way, I have to be this way, all of this doesn't apply. There is enormous freedom. The fish has the entire ocean to swim in. The bird has the entire sky to fly in. This is where the path emerges from, this kind of freedom. It has not existed before this moment, nor has it come into existence now. Therefore, reality is thus. Reality is thus is, you know, no categories. It just is this now. But a quick look at it. It has not existed before. Right? There's no resting place for you where you could say, Buddha nature is already there. I just have to, like, hook myself into Buddha nature. Everything's fine. Nor is it created by you. It has not existed before this moment, nor is it coming into existence now through your practice. These categories also don't apply. Practice is neither passive nor active. It's not creating anything, but it also doesn't use something that is already there. In each moment, we are bringing life forth vigorously, as Dogen says. In the same way, when a person engages in practice enlightenment in the Buddha way, as the person realizes one Dharma, the person permeates that Dharma. As the person encounters one practice, that person practices that practice. You know, when I read this sentence and I don't know how it continues, right? I want to read, when a person realizes one Dharma, the person realizes all Dharmas. That's our fantasy. I love this. Dogen says, when a person realizes one Dharma, the person permeates that Dharma. And as the person encounters one practice, the person fully practices that practice. So we do one practice at a time. Just this. You do this fully. It actualizes the totality of being. And then you practice this fully. You want to do one practice fully and then be done. I want to. Want to arrive. And what? Rest. Take a break. Take a break from living. Be complete. Have arrived. No. No, 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 no. I want to switch to Ta-Nehisi, Kaze Ta-Nehisi's translation, because I practiced with this phrase a lot, and you know, maybe implicitly I'm suggesting you might want to do this too. Okumura Rishi translates, for this doing one and completing one, for this there is a place and a path. But Kaze Ta-Nehisi translates, here is the place. Here the way unfolds. Doing this, there is your place. Doing this, the way unfolds. Unfolding. Again, back to Dogen. The boundary of the known is not clear. This is because the known is born and practiced simultaneously with the complete penetration of the Buddha Dharma. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but let me introduce some other words for this. The complete penetration of the Buddha Dharma, when is that going to happen?
Now.
If at all, now. But for many of us, it's happening in the future. It's an ideal, the complete penetration of the Buddha Dharma. We may never actually accomplish this. In fact, we probably will never accomplish this, the complete penetration of the Dharma. Or it's actually a positive expression to say we will never accomplish this because the ocean is inexhaustible. What a fantasy to, you know, completely penetrate the Buddha Dharma. So maybe we could say the complete penetration of the Buddha Dharma is an ideal. It's an idea that we turn into an ideal. And what is our actual practice? Our actual practice is now. Dogen says, the known, this, is limited. Because there are inexhaustible aspects beyond it. But it is practiced simultaneously with the complete penetration of the Buddha Dharma. This now, this your actual practice, is practiced simultaneously with this ideal penetration of the whole Buddha Dharma. If this is happening at all, it is happening through your full practice, your fully engaged practice now. In other words, the ideal is realized in your sincere effort. If you throw yourself into your practice 100%, from Dogen's point of view, this is enlightenment. It's not dependent on some special experience. Those occur too, but they're not special actually. They are just what occurs in that moment now. And then when what occurs now is the realization of the Buddha Dharma too. My teacher gave me this phrase, or gave many of us this phrase, which stayed with me for a long time until today. Direction, which is the sincere effort, direction functions as an endpoint. But this is hard to understand. I'm giving this to... The boundary of the known is not clear. This sounds like, oh, it's confused, it's not clear. No. It looks like the bound, you know, I know this thing, it has a boundary, I know this is a clock, right? I think this is clear, but it's actually unclear because all other things participate in it. And if you think about your life, it's like there's nothing clear about it, not as a deficiency, but actually as a virtue. Participating. There's mystery involved in what is, you know, this limited known now. And it is born and practiced simultaneously with the complete penetration of the Buddha Dharma. We forget this. We should not think that what we have attained is conceived by ourselves and known by our discriminating mind. Although complete enlightenment is immediately actualized, its intimacy is such that it does not necessarily form a view. In fact, viewing is not something fixed. Okay, we've already Dogen already talked about this previously and said, Buddhas do not necessarily know that they are Buddhas. So, I want to come to an end here, but it's intimacy. The actualization of enlightenment, Genjo Koan, to complete that which appears as simultaneously unique and universal, right? This is realization. This is intimate. This happens now, and it happens through your own presence. And this intimacy does not necessarily form a view. You do not need to understand it, in other words. The power of this intimacy and what it does in the world does not necessarily need to form a view. In fact, he says, viewing is not something fixed. Our job as practitioners, and what I've just done is maybe deceiving, is not to think about practice. It is to do our practice wholeheartedly. Your practice is to let go of views. As Nagarjuna says, you know, emptiness is the relinquishing of all views. When you establish yourself in Zazen, you are relinquishing all views. You establish yourself just as a presence. And moment after moment, we can make this, effortless effort to establish ourselves as present, or join our minds with the presence that we already are. Now, if views arise around this, Dogen is clearly presenting us with a lot of views. They're not fixed. The truth of this practice is not in the views that can be expressed this way or that way. It's in that presence, and it's in that doing from that presence. So we should not forget this by getting, involved with the study of a text like this. So Dogen undermines, in a way, what he's doing. And yet, these views, he doesn't dismiss the views. The views are pointing us. They keep pointing us. In that sense, they are essential for our path and for our study. They keep weeding out how not to do it.